Welcome back, everybody, to the Kitbag Conversations podcast. This week, we're joined by the Tank Brothers, King Diary himself, and Jake, again. What's going on?
Hi there.
Well, introduce yourself. Come on.
I'm Tank Diary. I run a page on Instagram and Twitter as well. Probably you've seen my nice green graphics at some point.
That's it. Just a
dead stare into the camera. Just
I post tanks.
I
like trains.
Men go one of three ways. Either get into sports, trains, or tanks. I pick mine.
That's what you get. In
no, the trains are the autists, man. They just sit there and stare. They're
fucking. I mean, no. So like. We have AFV recognition here, and we have Tank Diary, and AFV is very military. Like, he talks about TTPs, SOPs. He's, like, down in the Nat's ass about it. You kind of take it from, like, a historical aspect of, like, looking at it. And so, like, how did you get into that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been, like, over the past year, and I've been doing this, and people have been asking me, oh, what's the BDA of that, after that video? And I'm like, what the fuck's a BDA? I'm not coming at this from a military point of view. So if anyone's under the impression, like I've not been in the military, I'm not in the military now. I did history at university, and I've always been really interested in military history, always been interested in tanks. So that's the kind of angle I'm coming at it from, just sort of like military history, rather than actually knowing about tanks from my own experience.
So the question is, AFV on a 1 to 10 scale, how much does Tank Diary suck?
I'm the biggest tribute page. That's actually all I am. I'm actually his biggest tribute page.
You're like a fan page.
So, to be fair, we so before he set up his page, he used to follow me, and like he started like commenting on my post, and like I was like, fucking hell, like this bloke's all over it. And I just started messaging him for help and stuff like that on like certain models, because like the T80s like his like absolute specialty. Like he knows everything about T80s, and I'd just go to him for advice and that. And then he ended up making his own page.
Well, yeah, because I actually had a page for about a year before, and it was actually out about the same kind of time you set up AFV recognition. And like, yeah, AFV recognition came up on my feed, and I thought, fuck, I bet this is some like twat that I know, because I thought it's the way you got on, I thought it was someone I recognized, but I followed it, and that's why I really liked it. And then I realized obviously it's not someone I know, but I had that page, but I only sort of like posted a bit of like military stuff and not really tanks. And then after like a year of them kind of following you and seeing what you did, I sort of thought, well, here, I fucking like tanks too, so I'm gonna start doing it.
Yeah, because for ages, like, you followed me on the Tank Diary page and stuff, and I was like liking each other's posts or whatever. Sounds like a start of a love story, doesn't it? And it I was liking each other's posts and all that kind of stuff. And then he just messaged me one day. He was like, "Oh yeah, I'm that Lewis bloke. You know, you like you message all the time." I was like, "Fucking hell, I didn't even know." You know what I mean?
I remember I had a like a situation like that when I first started, like with the old page Croatoa. And I remember I was like writing, but I would see some other guy like either comment or have his own post come up. And I was like, his writing style is very familiar. And then at one point he like commented that he was like, someone asked him his background. They're like, oh, you bullshit Putin shill. What's your background? He's like, I facilitated deaths in Iraq. And I was like, this guy was my schoolhouse instructor when I was at Intel school. I was like, you're the only person I ever knew who said facilitated deaths in ISIS in the same sentence. And then I hit him up. It's like, are you Staff Sergeant, whatever, whatever? And he's like, yeah, how'd you know?
Because like, ah. I'm one of your students.
And he was like, oh shit, who are you? And I was like, I'll never tell you.
Yeah, that's kind of something I worry about, because I joined like some Facebook pages of like T-80 and T-72 Facebook pages, and they're like the kind of pages Gabe was telling me about. It's like
those are
the kind of stuff that your dad would join, because he's like sitting in his shed painting his tank, and he's like, oh for fuck's sake, this tank doesn't have exactly the right color for a 1989 model or something. So he goes onto Facebook, logs on, and asks all his like 60-year-old mates, what should this look like? So I joined those, and I started like posting stuff in, and like, and I'm fucking correcting people and shit. And then I thought, hang on, if anyone follows my other page, they'll know exactly who I am, because I post the exact same kind of style.
That them pages, by the way, like, I know which ones you're on, like T72 research group, T80 research group. Those pages are just like, they're amazing. They are, if you want like every intricate detail, modelers, mate, they fucking know it. They know everything about this stuff like that.
It's not quite autism. It's like a sort of like dad knowledge that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, like you go and sit in the shed and make like T-80s, but like proper specific models. Like it'll be, they'll get a picture of a T-80 from like Grozny and make that exact one right down to like where the dirt is on the tracks and stuff like that. the detail is insane.
Imagine getting all those guys together. You're like, all right, group watch. We're watching The Beast again.
Dude, so I got a question, because I've seen this before on YouTube where it was like British men and their hobbies. And it was like dudes who paint entire like 18th century armies and duke it out. There's the train guy who had like an entire shed where him and his wife played train conductor after work. And it was like, I couldn't, dude, look it up, like type up YouTube British train conductor hobby. And that dude, like, seriously, they put on the whole thing and him and his wife go play train conductor. And he controls the little steam engine on the tracks. But like, awesome, what you're moment talking about does not exist here in America. You're like, yeah, your dad does that. Like, no, your dad in America becomes a Trump supporter and goes to DC and riots. He doesn't do that shit in the States. Like, he falls off a wagon and gets really fucking political about abortion. So like, what's in the fucking water to make it so
that British men don't have that kind of outlet, so they just go into their garage or their shed instead. It's like they can't just go put on a red hat and storm a capital. They have to find something else.
It's all about the shed culture.
It's the shed culture.
It's seriously shed culture.
Like, I have my, Lewis, you know, I have my garage I have my gym in my garage and stuff like that. Like it's like a pillar of British society. It's sort of like having your sort of life, it's kind of centered around your shed, your garage. You know?
Yeah, like every kid in England will know, like, or Britain as a whole, like they'll know, like the dad just saying, "I'm going to the shed," and he wouldn't do anything. He'd just go in there.
I mean, I live in an estate, and like the houses around me in their gardens. Like the sheds have names on them, like it says Dennis or Craig or something. Like it's like a chapel, you know.
I'm fucking dying.
That is, oh man, a peek behind the curtain. You were like, how do these guys think? They were like, well, we're autistic and live in a house.
all of the men in Britain are just like, I gotta do something in this shed because she won't come in here.
At what age does that happen?
The shed of this castle.
Like, at what age does that happen? Because in America, I think, like, once you have two kids and you're in your 40s, you're like, yeah, I'm going to get really into the Civil War.
Yeah, like...
Probably about the same, I think. Probably about the same sort of shed era comes in.
That's so funny.
40s. Yeah.
I don't know. I think for me, like the tank autism set in pretty early. Because I was used to play like Men of War and stuff like that. And it used to have because you do that thing where you could like direct control your tank, and it would like show the thickness of the armor for where you were pointing at, because you know you were like driving your fucking Tiger around or something like that. And I'd like memorize the exact thickness of the armor on all these like Soviet tanks just so I could like get the right shot and shit like that. So, but yes, it started early.
Okay. So, some Man at War. Those games are still around, aren't they?
They were good. I used to play Faces of War. That was a good one as well.
That was like the runner-up to it.
Yeah.
Or the prequel or something.
Mine was Command & Conquer, actually. I remember the Brotherhood of Nod and the GDI, if you're old enough for that. But that was that was the beginning. I just had like my dad and his chocolate chip like desert camis, just like, let me tell you how to do war. He's like, spam tanks. He's like,
I used to do I'd say my intro was playing Hearts of Iron 2 in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, same thing. Dad, chocolate chip camis, sitting down watching Band of Brothers again, going like, yeah, you want to invade Poland? I'm like, yeah, I'll watch you do that. Just like, yeah, the Germans had it out.
Jesus, dude.
Holy that's shit. Bonding, mate.
Oh, 100. Yeah. Ask me why I'm doing what I am today.
No, it's funny. So, it's like, you guys were talking about it. You're like reaching out to each other, but it's I'm completely okay with it now, because after like 6 months of with Matt and like hanging around Croatoan and all that stuff, is like now I just kind of burst into pages of like, because I don't even have like Kitbag or the Croatoan report page. I have my own page. I'm like, what's up, man? How you doing? You like intel? And they're just like I did that to one dude, and he's like, please don't tell me you're the feds. You're too cool, man. I don't like this. It's like, yeah, I know. None of us have friends. All of us. Like the same stuff, it's okay. And he's like, oh god, please, you're probably ATF, like it's Poseidon S2. He's just like, this is kind of too good to be true. I'm like, no, it's not. I'm just really used to reaching into like autistic spheres and being like, no, there's many of us.
Just like, not alone. It's funny because Cody, you added us through the group chat, and I think he was asleep, and we just talked in there for like 9 hours.
He woke up to like 80 messages, and he's like, it's like, so great, I have friends now. It's like, no, there's, we got to unite.
Or you just like all Con S2, you hit him up. You're like, hey, bro, what's up?
He's
just like, drag him into conflicts. You're like, defend this.
Have you just got like 24 autistic Instagram groups going?
Yeah. There's a lot of men in sheds all around the world who are like, wait. There's many of us? Like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of us. A lot of us.
Yeah, you start kind of like getting your network of other pages and like starting to get to know the people on them. Some of them aren't as like keen to start letting the barrier down, but like a lot of them, once they sense you're just as autistic, it's like you're suddenly best mates.
Yeah, you're just like, did we just become best friends?
I do want to, before we go autistic level down into like tank hole thickness, how did you like the comment section on just that regular just Zelensky quote?
Oh god.
That's boy. Just like, I love, right, you know, I love comment sections. And like me and Matt was talking before this started. And like, I mean, me, Instagram's generally quite professional, but on Twitter, I'm an absolute gobshite. I just argue with everyone, man. Like, I've been arguing today, I've done it yesterday, I'll do it tomorrow. But like, this is the thing that we go on about with comments and stuff like that. And it's like, all you done was post a Zelensky quote, literally said by the man himself, the leader of Ukraine. And you've still got people in the comments calling you a pro-Russian for posting a Zelensky quote. Like, how
there was no caption coupled with it. It was like, I haven't posted on a Crow and Tone in weeks. Just like, yeah, just let me drop a quote and a picture of Alex Jones smiling.
Common Crow and Tone L.
Oh, oh god damn it, it's so funny.
It's because that I guess that's like the best place to start, right? Is like, because like now it's so bad, right? Like it's both sides are kind of dug in literally and metaphorically on the Twitter and the battle space, but it's like fucking, how do you can't kind of break the hold. It's like the Russians that invaded northern Kyiv versus today are they're two, first off, they are different people because all the other Russians that started this are dead, and now we're, you know, new guys, new plans. But I think like nobody can get over the fact that the Russians had a bold first half, or not a bold, but a dumb first quarter, first half. And so now it's all over, which is, I guess, like the starting point. Like, so Tank Diary.
By first quarter, you mean like that first sort of like month where the first plan just went fucking tits up.
Dude.
They just cut the head off.
Or they went, Golf 4 and 91. Let's do that.
Yeah, dude.
It's 20 years Hell's today, Highway isn't it? 2. From, it's 20 years today from the other Golf 4, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The second, the Two Towers.
Yeah.
That was a good movie. Wait. I like that one.
Yeah, there you go. You got it. Is it a Lord of the Rings or a 9/11 joke? You don't know. But
when I was a kid, I used to call Lord of the Rings the Two Towers, the Twin Towers, until I was like 10.
Dad, it's just like, please stop. Please, God.
But just circling back to like kind of what you're saying, I get what you mean. So it was like the kind of like memes and jokes and shit that started in like that first month or two, they're still there. Like the, oh, the javelin shit and the Russians abandoning their tanks. Like, that's the kind of stuff that happened in those like first 2 months, those sort of early days when they were trying to penetrate really far behind Ukrainian lines. And they were just overextending past their supply lines, and they were abandoning tanks. They were going into ambushes. That was the kind of shit that was kind of done by April, May last year. But like the kind of narrative that stemmed from that is still like dominant in a lot of circles, in my view, anyway.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I've seen the Twitter community just hyper circulating a single source article that said Russians are sending their conscripts into battle with a shovel, and you're like okay, well, is that Wagner? Like, are they also giving them fentanyl to clear minefields? Because that's what the Russians do. Like, that's just their way to do it. Like, hey, Stalin did that with the Mongolians, and guess who's getting shovels? Central Asians. So you're like, it's not Russians being killed.
I saw that and I told AFP, I was like, That's some biblical shit to be told, like, hey, your enemy wants to kill you with a shovel. Like, bro, that's personal. Like, getting shot isn't that person, but like somebody coming into your trench with a shovel, there is no, wait, let's fucking talk about this. Like, bro, I just fucking crawled 80 meters through shit to beat you to death with a shovel. You think we're talking? You think we're gonna negotiate? Like, there's no. If somebody told me, like, yeah, they're willing to crawl through all this shit just to beat you to death with a shovel, like, bro, I'd bring the kitchen sink, grenades, like, I'd have a revolver if they got that close. Not for them, but for me. Like, oh, they're within shovel range. Like, fucking, I'm not fucking with the dude who's like, no, the shovel. I'm bringing the shovel. Like, the fucking what?
It's not even an e-tool. It's like a garden shovel.
Yeah, it's a it doesn't even have a serrated edge. It's your grandma's trowel. He's like, it's coming. Like, no, it's not. I'm ending. Like, I'm on 30 milligrams of fentanyl and like 800 milligrams of caffeine. And like, what the fuck? Got a Wagner patch on his forehead. Like,
Yeah, but like Tank Tire, like you're saying, the narrative of those initial jokes that came out, like, oh, Russians are bad, Russia bad, LOL. You're like, yeah, it's already been over a year. Ukraine has not taken anything back out of the annexed regions. That happened in September. And like, hey, center of gravity is in Bakhmut, quote unquote. And so everyone said, oh, there's no strategic value. Then Zelensky comes out and says, if we lose Bakhmut, we're going to lose.
He literally then came out and said that it has the most strategic value because it's like the gateway to that eastern half of Ukraine. I mean, that's more strategic value than fucking anything recent anyway.
Yeah, the counter argument I've seen in the last 48 hours is Putin went to Mariupol under the cover of darkness. You're like, and? You're like, okay.
And have Toby Keith out there with the USO out there in Mariupol. Fucking, like, we used to do it all the time.
Can you imagine?
I guess, like, the one thing I wanted to hit was, because we were talking about this in the group chat, and I was like, this would be a really fun one to talk about, was Matt and I pretty much had the same viewpoint, because he comes from the Marines, I come from, like, airborne light infantry units and air assault, and so watching the opening barrage, like, we knew, Matt and I knew, because it was like, okay, the Stingers are working, the Javelins are working, Russia doesn't stand a chance. Like, that shit wasn't supposed to work. Like, T-90 turrets were not supposed to be flying off. Like, the Shatora system was supposed to deactivate that. The flares and the, it's not, whatever, the CMOS, the systems that protect the helicopters from Stinger missiles. So like we kind of knew, and then we also have like our views on the airport. But like for you guys as tankers, how like at what point? I guess like what was it like watching the beginning of the war for you? And then at what point were you like, oh shit, Russia's fucked. Like this isn't gonna go the way they think it is.
I think 4th Guards Tank Division for me. Probably same for you as well, Lewis. Just seeing in the first few days when you were just abandoning everything. Like there was just like every 5 minutes I was coming across another T-80U abandoned. Like everywhere they were just leaving a trail of them. And it wasn't even a case of like, I mean, like it was obviously because of fuel. Like T-80, just for people listening, T-80's got a gas turbine engine and it's great, it's fast, it's maneuverable, but if you don't have a logistics chain for it, it's not going to get very far. But because of that, they were having to abandon. They didn't have the logistics to get them fuel and stuff. But yeah, they were just completely leaving the vehicles. They weren't even denying them. Like they were just leaving. I remember seeing vehicles still with like the commander's HMG fitted and stuff like that. Like I don't think you'd ever see that from a Western vehicle. Like we'd deny the vehicle and take whatever kit we had. You wouldn't just like they just left them. You know what I mean? Just completely left them. I think that was the most shocking part for me, was like just how they were just leaving everything. Just that was bizarre.
But there's a really interesting thing you started pointing out last year, and it was the lack of recovery vehicles. In those first like month, there were no recovery vehicles. Well, I mean, there was like something like out of the sheer number of vehicles being abandoned and recaptured or whatever, and all that tractor kind of stuff, there were no recovery vehicles, or there was like two or three or something the first month, and it was like these tanks were getting stuck in the mud and there were no brems or anything to pull them back out, so they were obviously just not. I think that really gave away either a lack of planning or like an expectation that things would go far easier than they did, which I think was a really interesting observation that like wasn't really pointed out elsewhere.
Yeah, because I remember putting a post on, and this like that you said it was at the start. And yeah, I think it was like a month or two in, and I was like, I've not seen a single recovery vehicle. Like, not a single one. And I was like, hang on, like, this is really weird. So I put a post on, I was like, any pictures that come through, send them. And then I put a big post on detailing, like, I've not seen a single recovery vehicle, basically. And it took about 3 months until I seen one picture of a Brem. And, like, that's absolutely insane. It shows that they weren't working in the BTG, like, the way they were supposed to at all, because they should have had, you know, like a CSS company supporting them with these kind of vehicles, and yeah, they just weren't there. So I think that ties into the Russian thought that they were going to get in there rapid and it'd be done. I think and they didn't think they needed anything like that, but obviously they did. Yeah, I think that's why a lot of the kit got abandoned as well, because they just couldn't get it out when it was stuck or broken down. They just couldn't move it, because there was sort of a case as well a few times where you'd see two vehicles abandoned. They'd be hooked up together as well, like they were towed up together, but they've both just legged it. Like, I don't know why. It's bizarre. It's so strange.
Well, here's something, like going back to like the opening narrative and everything, where if you're talking about the guards leaving their tanks, no recovery vehicles and whatnot, and everyone still to this day go, they thought it was a training exercise. And you're like, brother, Russian knows. The Russians are actively supporting this war. Like you just can't go. Or you could see something like, they're conscripts. They're awful at fighting. But you're like, did anyone else see that video of a conscript mobilized on a Tuesday and clear an entire trench line by himself on a Friday?
Like, he just dead by the Monday, wasn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, he was, yeah. He's a hero of the Russian Federation now, by the way.
Jesus! Shows you don't need military training, Tank Diary. You don't need to be...
I'll just throw my textbooks.
It's like CSGO.
In 1 week, you could literally become better than... Not even 1 week. He did it in 6 days. Medal of Honor. Like,
fucking... Zero to heroes.
Zero to heroes. Fucking...
It's worth looking into. Like, what is the qualifications to get, like, a Hero of the Russian Federation medal? Because in America, you usually have to die. Or lose a limb.
Same with the VC. Same with the VC. you basically got to die to get it.
There was your man who got the VC, what was it, in like Basra, driving the warrior.
Yeah, John Tabari, yeah.
Yeah.
Got shot in the head and everything. Like, had a smash the warrior, and he's still just driving about, getting people out of burning vehicles and stuff.
That's fucking crazy. But just going back to the original thing of like, what were my initial impressions? I mean, obviously, you guys are coming out from having actual experience in the military. But for me, I'd probably built up Russia a bit in my head that they were, because I'd just recently been like around about 2021, just started getting into Chechen history and like the Chechen War and all that kind of stuff. And like, when you read about the Russian army in the 90s, it's just like, or Russia in general in the 90s, it's just like possibly the worst fucking place on earth at the time. It just, the disorganization, the corruption is just crazy. And then when you read about the experience in the army in those sort of like mid to late 90s, it sounds horrendous. Like, I'm sure we've talked about it before, like Arkady Babchenko's book and the kind of experience he talks in that of like just being beaten by the officers and like they don't feed them and that kind of stuff and have no equipment. And I sort of, by about like the start of 2022, I was like, well, that's what Russia's army used to be like. But now it's like so much more organized. It looks so much better. Because I was thinking about 2014 when they just like swooped in, kicked the Ukrainian soldiers out of Crimea. And it was like, fucking hell, they are so organized. Like, even compared to Georgia 6 years later, it was, or 6 years earlier, sorry, it was, they seemed so organized. So by like the start of it, I was thinking they're going to absolutely fucking crush Ukraine. But then there was something I saw where there were, it was on Twitter, and there was stories coming out of some rail depot in Belarus or something where the Russian soldiers, was like 300 of them to a room, and they hadn't eaten in like 4 days or something. Like, they didn't have boots and their rifles were all fucking rusty and shit like that. And that's when I was like, my God, this sounds just like something out of the 90s. They're not actually that good. Like, well, not even in that.
I know which one you're talking about. It's like, that VDV officer or NCO came out and he was like, he defected, I want to say. He escaped to Poland or something and then came out with like all of his phone and started cataloging everything and went like, they didn't feed us. They gave us expired MREs. If they fed us, we had no water. Our equipment was either old. We didn't have socks. They gave us like nylon wrappings to wrap around our feet for socks. And they're like, and then if you counter argument that with what the Belarusians were saying, because they were, you know, working side by side in training exercise, the Belarusians were like, all they do is show up, fuck our girls, drink all our booze, and fist fight everyone. He's like, these guys are hoodlums. Like, they suck. And so, but when it comes down to like the military, like equipment that was coming out, it's like, yeah, the VDV and the Spetsnaz, they got all the cool shit because they were like, you guys got to do move fast. Mm. It's like conscripts, like,
well, yeah, no, I guess
an AK-47.
Yeah, the point I was just trying to make is it's like, it just wasn't as well-oiled a machine as I was expecting. And then it sort of made me realize it's not quite as well planned or organized as I thought. I mean, like, it's just like the biggest invasion in, you know, a long time. So of course there's going to be a lot of deficiencies, but it made me think, fuck, they're not actually going to swoop in here and take it in 3 days. There's going to be problems. I think it was, that's kind of when it dawned on me. And that was like, I think it was maybe before the war, or like whenever that guy defected, a few weeks after, whenever it was.
I think everyone had bigged up Russia though. I think,
yeah, definitely.
I think going a bit Alex Jones there. I can't remember who mentioned it, but like, I remember someone, there was a theory about basically like all the big arms companies and stuff like that had funded like all kinds of it, sort of like propaganda. But I mean, like, when you look at every game, at all the films, they're all about America versus Russia, NATO versus Russia. They've bigged it up massively for years. So everyone thought Russia were going to smash them up because that's what you're led to believe. You know what I mean? You play against
someone Battlefield.
Yeah, and then you got War Thunder, where all the Russian vehicles are amazing. You know what I mean? Like, you play all these games and like you watch all these films, and Russia are always like they're really good. And then when it actually happens, everyone's like,
"You remember the second Modern Warfare 2, where it's like they literally fucking
they invaded in America."
Like there's like some like cutscene, and you've got like an F-22 pilot radioing back to HQ, and he's like talking, saying, "Oh my god, there's something in front of me," and then he cuts out, and it's like then it shows this like Russian air armada approaching New York, and that's what we were brought up to believe, you know?
Exactly. Yeah,
Cody and I have talked about this before, but it's like, when you want to paint who the villain is, because you always need a big bad to keep everyone kind of like in line or something, and it's a lot easier to paint the Russians, who has traditionally been the boogeyman, the bad guy of Europe, and it's really easy to paint them as the villain because, Cody always brings this up, no one wants to go fight and die in some Southeast Asian jungle against the Chinese. It's a lot easier to fight the Russians.
It was, I forget the name of the Japanese general, but he was the one who fought General Percival down in Southeast Asia, the British guy. And he mentioned, he's like, the British and Americans hate fighting at night in the jungle when it's wet. They're weak-minded. And it's like, what a mother. All right, first off, I'm in the comment section and I don't fucking like it. All right, like, fucking. It's like, yeah, I don't want to be in the Middle East. I don't want to be in the shitty jungle. I don't want to be down in Africa. And it's nothing to do with anything other than, like, fucking sucks. Like, it's hot, it's muggy. And so when you think about Russia and the open fields and the tanks, and it's like, that's cool, I'll take that. And like, you liberate a town and there's baguettes and wine and women, and you're just like, this is great. And your grandpa told you all those great stories, and you're just like, it's gonna be so amazing. And then you end up in a porta shitter in Afghanistan and you're fighting the door and jiggling it because there's these things called camel spiders that'll nick your ass hairs while you take a shit and build its little furry nest. I used to do that, by the way. That's a true story. I used to have to, like, shake the fucking porta potties because there's all types, because it gets warm in there at night because all the poo's in there. And so the little critters go get warm with your poo. So in the morning, you got to shake that thing and get all the shit out of, get all the bugs out of there. Yeah. Grandpa left that story out. Like, but yeah, no.
That's the kind of stuff you're not sold.
Exactly. Yeah, no, God, no. Like, you're fucking paying for college. Like,
well, if you want to talk about, like, selling, like, potential conflicts, there's a lot more movies about World War II in the European theater than there is the Pacific. Like, what do you have? The Pacific? How many movies about the Australians in the Southeast, the Solomon Islands are there? Probably one. Like, that's, that whole conflict was just miserable.
Everybody loves Band of Brothers. Nobody loves the Pacific.
But, no one really does. They got this new one coming out about the, it's good. Yeah. But it's like, oh, we talked about that before, Cody. It's, I forgot who it was with. It was with All Continents Too, where it was like, how can you shape some average kid off the street into the fighting machine that needs to eat maggots to survive?
Yeah, Jesus. I mean,
it's like, yeah, it's a real thing.
Yeah, like, we're John Bassalone, patron saint of machine gunners. If you don't know who that is, do your research. But John Bassalone, he stops because the kid's like, I want to kill the enemy. I'm not going to say what he actually said. It's super fucking racist. And he's like, oh, you want to do that? He's like, the Japanese. Oh,
yeah,
the slap, yeah. He's like, you want to do that? You think you're a hardcore? He's like, the Japanese soldier lives on a cup of rice a fucking day. And you're like, oh, shit. Like, yeah, that's that's Russia, bro. And it's not because they have to, or not because they want to, it's because they have to. But it's like, you know, I don't, to kind of defend it after you guys slapped the military intelligence community, it's I think it's a combination of Black Hawk Down meets Operation Market Garden, right? So, like, the Russians, like you said, Tank Diary, they slapped the shit out of the Ukrainians in 2014, absolutely dominated. Nobody can, I mean, Azov became a thing. That's how bad that ass beating was, was that they immediately went, okay, the army's useless. We have to create a Nazi battalion to fight the Russians. And everyone's like, well, hold up now. But it's a combination of the two things, because it's like, the Russians knew they could beat them, or thought they could. And so it's like Black Hawk Down, where if you've ever seen the movie or read the books, they're like, you won't need your NVGs. We're only going to be down there for like 2 hours. It's a quick in and out, right? And so they don't bring like half the shit they're supposed to bring, which is what the VDV did. They jumped into the Kyiv airport and those key locations with like 2 to 3 magazines. If you look at the video on Croatoan, those guys are like bringing assault packs, like 2-day packs. And if you look at that in comparison to Panama, which is where the 82nd jumped in to, you know, just cause operation.
Dude, they were, what it kind of reminded me of was, actually kind of reminded me of Czechoslovakia in 1968, because they did the same thing. They just landed at the airport, took it over, and then started flying in the troops. And it's like, I think that's probably what they thought was going to happen. It was going to be nice and quick, and they'd start flying in the reinforcements. But
that's,
Modi and I, we talked about this before. It's like the Russian strategy of invading a country is like a 7-prong approach, where they, at first they start blowing stuff up, then they start releasing rapists and murderers and freeing the prisons. To create chaos, they have the people freak out, then they could have the troops bleed in by either a port or an airport, bring the guys in, solidify power in the region. It's very asymmetrical in their approach, and they tried it again. But yeah, I mean, like AFE mentioned, it's like, yeah, the logistics lines, like, and that's like, you know, the big the catalyst everyone still goes back to is like, oh, the Russian logistics are poor. You're like, I'm pretty sure they've learned over the last 14 months.
Yeah.
No, it's...
I think for me, I just kind of like, I mean, I was like, what, 16, 17 in 2014, whenever they invaded there. And I sort of just slept on Ukraine for like 8 years after that. And I think I just still had that in my head that Russia would just pitch up like a bunch of, what, little green men again, and then pick the Ukrainians out of their barracks before they even know what's going on. But it was a different kind of beast at that point. But yeah.
He's gone. You're good. No, you're good. He's probably got to go potty or something. He got to go pee-pee.
Then on the flip side, to just carry on this narrative of like, okay, so they fucked up in the first day. The plan didn't work. They didn't go in and end up fighting what they expected to fight. You can't keep going on with that narrative. It's like, that was true in the first month or two, but the Russians aren't, you know, they're not that stupid. They're not just going to sit
there. They're dumb. They're not stupid. Yeah.
But these, a lot of people just want to keep buying into this, and they just want to keep circulating the same thing that, oh, Russia dumb, Russia stupid, Russia makes silly mistakes. It's like a lot of that stuff happened the first month or two. It's not happening still. So
it's like the people always say on Twitter and like in comments and stuff, the 3 day thing. Like, oh, 3 days.
Three days. 380 of the 3 day.
War. It's like, mate, you do realize that the 3 day thing came from the US intelligence report. Like, yeah. the US intelligence, like, yeah, you've probably got all 3 days. So everyone uses that as a joke, as if Russia were like, yeah, we'll be there for you. Russia never said that. It never said but it.
I remember some of the same Austin accounts in like, because the way I remember it was like the lead up. All January, February was just like Russian tanks going west for every fucking day. And everyone knew what was kind of coming. And then by like February 16th or something, it was like, fuck me, it's going to happen. And then it just like kind of passed and didn't happen. And I was like, oh, maybe it's not going to happen. But I remember accounts posting at that time, big awesome accounts were posting like pictures of a boardroom full of Ukrainian generals being like, look at their faces. They know how doomed they are. Like, you know, and then these are the same ones who then like are still spinning the same narrative of like they were saying. So it's just kind of stuck.
Remember those what date of this are? February 24th when the Russians came in? I stayed up that entire night and I was on Telegram channels and on Twitter, and there was these reports. It was something like 02 their time. And they were like, yeah, Ukraine's making mild counteroffensives to secure key terrain in Donbass across the water. Or blown bridges and everything, like it was common. And so it's like just reading that, watching that happen in slow motion. It's like, yeah, the Ukrainians knew what was coming, but it was that weird. We didn't see this. No way. When Georgia got invaded, nobody gave a fuck. Not a single person did.
I just remember
I was just going to say that
Bush administration, not giving a fuck. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you could always look at it that way. If you want to be like an Alex Jones theorist, you're like, oh, the Russians did it now, but not the last administration, because they knew the current president two administrations ago didn't do anything. So it's under what it was August. It was election season 2008. They invaded Georgia and annexed like what, 25-30% of it. But yeah, we didn't see something like that. And if you look at the pictures of the Ukrainians in 2014, they're wearing Soviet fatigues. They're armed with Moisin Nagants. They were not ready for a fight. It was great. It was disgusting looking at those pictures. And so
a lot of them were corrupt anyway. A lot of in 2014, I think a lot of people don't realize that like a lot of the Ukrainians just defected. There's one. Up to like the hundreds, I think, of like Ukrainian high command were just, they already knew what was coming. And then just when they turned up, they were like, yeah, put me Russian patch on now.
It's that female. She's running around Crimea. She's like the Crimean judge or something like that. She was I'll find her. You'll know her when you see her, but it was like a female Russian officer who, when the Russians came in, she defected and gave up all the legal documents. She's like, here's everyone that would be an enemy of the state, and became like the judge, jury, and executioner of Crimea for a little bit. She's very attractive. So she was shotgunned everywhere. They were like, look, see, the Russians are doing good things. But it's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's crazy to see it, because it's like now, like you're saying, like the three day war, that was U.S. intel, but it's like the shock troops are gone, right? Like the 4th Tank Guards, most of the VDV, their airlift capabilities, the entire Kyiv airport is bombed to shit. It can't be used for huge flights. So it's like, okay, now that the strike package is gone, now we're kind of like in this. And I was fucking with AFV last time he was on here. I was like, yeah, tanks don't matter no more, bro. Tanks are obsolete. Like fucking, but now it's kind of shifted to this slow meat grinder. And so like when you talk about tanks now, because there's tanks are, they're going to be around. Fuck whoever said, if anybody ever fucking says tanks are obsolete, I think I'm going to smack them. But it's like, now that the javelins have ran out, now that we're kind of down to like RPGs and AT4s and what's left of the in-laws, there's more javelins coming, but you guys are watching the tanks. What's happening now with the tanks, right? Like, are they special and we need to keep them safe? Because that's what AFV was saying last time. Like, they kind of hide the tanks away from the drones because the artillery is just so good. Like, where are the tanks now and how are they moving, like, in your opinions?
Well, I sort of feel like now the most common thing that I'm seeing is this sort of pair work that you see them doing. They'll scoot up close to the line in a pair and just, I mean, what they're firing every 7 seconds, there's two of them. There's a shot going off every 3-4 seconds. They just unload 20, 30 rounds and then deploy smoke, scoot off, turn backwards, and that's it. And they're doing these sort of like hit and run tactics, keeping them really safe or trying to keep them safe. A lot more like quick slice and then get back out again kind of thing.
Yeah, just a shoot and scoot. Now, is that like the T-80s or are we seeing that with like the BMPs and all that other stuff?
It's mainly like in Bakhmut anyway, it's mainly it's mainly T-90Ms. I guess sort of T-80 BVMs as well. The more modern stuff, really. But I mean, there's all this talk about T-62s, but I'm not seeing them in of course, it's like this is all with the lens of like what I'm seeing, but it's in Bakhmut anyway, what I'm seeing is the T-90Ms and the more modern T-80s are doing a lot of this sort of groundwork, a lot of this fire support in pairs kind of stuff, where it looks quite effective because they're not getting hit, they're getting away. They just go up and like pull the shit out of an area and then suppress it and get away.
Yeah. No, that was...
I think with the tanks now, people are... I already had an argument on Twitter today with that Blake, because sending it in the group chat about the T-62s. He just took it out of nowhere. We weren't even talking about that. But, people are joking about T-62s coming out, and it's like, where are they? Have you seen them in combat? Has anyone seen them in combat? I've seen a couple of destroyed, but I've barely seen any videos of them in combat. What do you see in combat? Do you see T-90Ms, T-80 BVMs, T-72 B3s? They've still got brand new tanks coming upgraded out of the factory. You know what I mean? And I mean, that's not to say the Ukrainians are also refurbing a lot of stuff as well in Kharkiv, and can't remember where the other one is. I think it's Zhytomyr. I think that's where the main two tank factories are. And they're still refurbing stuff as well. So like both sides got no problems like refurbing kit. I think the T-62s for anyone listening who thinks that like Russia are having to roll out like the deep reserves, I think they're purely giving them to the DNR and LNR for rear security. And potentially just getting them in country for when and if they do need them. If you look at stuff like Zapad and all them kind of exercises, it's been a Russian thing for the past 10 years now, where you can observe the Russians have been every exercise, part of the exercise is to get 100 T-62s out of storage, out of deep storage, and completely overhaul them and modernize them. Like, it's not like a new thing. The Russians have been practicing this for years. I think it's just purely like, let's get them modernized and get them out the door while we can, while the factories are running as much as they can. And let's get them in theatre just in case we do need them. Because I think they're probably sat in a staging area off to the rear in case they need to be used. As well, going on to tanks as well, I don't know if you've seen this the other day, Tank Derry, but I think I've seen a post that went into like detail on numbers in T-80s, and I think there's like barely any of them left. Apparently, there's not many left at all in storage as well. Apparently, it's just T-80UDs, which obviously, for those that don't know, the factory that makes the engines is in Ukraine, so the Russians can't get spares for them. So, yeah, I don't think we'll see many of them for the foreseeable future.
It's a shame. They're my favourite. But I think there's some stuff about kind of a perspective, because they obviously started coming out at the end of 2022 with the sort of new model of T-72, the ones, well, I mean, there were the two, there was the one, there's like the B3 2022, which has like a lot more relict on it, a lot more ERA, and has like a better sight cover and stuff like that. And then there was another one that came out, which actually has like a worse thermal sight on it. And then they also came out with, they kind of came out with like an upgraded T80 BVM that had like an improved sight on it and similar kind of stuff to the B3 2022. And then they had another one again. So they had like an up-tiered version and then like a slightly lesser version that didn't have quite as good a thermal sight. And people were saying, oh, well, Russia's running out of the equipment needed to upgrade T80 BVs to BVM level, right? But they're still upgrading T80 BVs. They're still giving T80 BVs a thermal sight. They're still giving them more relics and stuff like that. Just because that BV is now not being upgraded to like a pre-war kind of or pre-invasion kind of BVM level, it's still a better tank. They're still upgrading these things. They're still rolling them out storage, sticking the thermal sight on them, sticking relics on T80 BVs. So people are looking at it as, oh, that's a downgraded T80 BVM. But I'm thinking, no, it's an upgraded T80 BV. You know, so I think people are kind of looking at it with the wrong perspective a bit there. And then they say, oh, well, Russia's desperate now, but they're still able to roll out these quite upgraded tanks.
Was it this group chat or another one? Because once again, you get in these group chats and you start messing with the Intel pages, you'll be like six group chats deep and like 80 messages in the morning. God forbid I wake up late. We were talking about that and we were like, you know, like you're talking like, you know, it's still a tank. It's still a Russian tank. It's still an upgraded tank. And it's like from a light aspect, like light infantry or special operations, it's like, bro, the last thing you want to run into it, as even as an American, is a tank as light infantry. And it's like, God help you if you don't have, because like we carry like, we have one or two AT4s per infantry squad. So there's like three or four per infantry squad, and then we have a javelin in the heavy weapon squad, and so like we're bringing like a thunderous amount of ass pain for tanks, and we still do not want to run into tanks. And then you're talking about a thermal sight on every tank. Like there isn't a fucking thermal sight in the entire platoon. I think there might be like one in the company, and nobody wants to use it because it's like the size of a bread loaf, and you're like, get that shit out of here. Like I'll just use an ACOG. I'll use iron sights before I bring a thermal. And so like you're talking about, and people don't realize, like, you don't need to like have a good thermal. Like you can have a shit thermal and you're still like, hey, there's a heat signature there in that forest, you know, call in
That's essentially my point. Like,
yeah,
they're still improving tanks. They might not be able to improve them to as improved as they were before, but they're still making and producing better tanks, right? Now, and able to upgrade old ones, which, you know, so I think it's exactly what you're saying. It's still better than nothing.
Yeah, I mean, but that's on like every tank, right? Like there's still a thermal sight on every tank, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So anybody giving you shit can go fuck off, because here's the thing. You're talking like I said, you're talking like every infantry company in America might have a thermal sight. Maybe if we can convince a private to fucking lug it. Like if every tank that Russia has a fucking thermal sight on it and they're 2-to-1 ratio on Ukraine, it's like, bro, fuck that noise. And that's what you're seeing too, is like the concentration in Bakhmut, like the Foreign Legion and like the 93rd Mech as they get into Bakhmut. They don't want to fucking go there because the T-90s and the T-72s are coming up and the light, and you know, you've got former Western soldiers sitting there like, okay, read that fucking intel report back to me. Like every tank out there has a thermal sight. I can't hide. I'm having to use like a space blanket in my fucking, they can't maneuver. It's like, yeah, no, go sit in that area that is like basically a pre-designated point for artillery where every tank has a thermal sight and is looking at you. And it's like, but you know, good to go. And it's like, and that's still coming off. Like, yeah, that's coming off the lot every day, right? It's like, it's not a good thermal sight, but it's a thermal sight. It's more than you got. Like,
well, I mean, exactly. What's going to
be? Yeah, go on.
Sorry, yeah. It's just like, are they going to run out of the ability to upgrade? I mean, that's the question. Like, are they going to run out of the supply chain to keep putting those thermal sights on all the tanks? But
do the Ukrainians have thermal sights on all their tanks?
No.
Jesus Christ.
But yeah, I'm not saying like all Russian tanks have thermal sights. I'm just saying
they have the ability.
They are so far displaying, yeah, the ability to put them on older tanks still.
Fuck that.
I have a question for that one, because you know, building on everything, in AFE just mentioned that there's two tank factories in Ukraine. Are those old Soviet holdovers?
So the main one is KMDB in Kharkov, right? Which is that's the Soviet hangover one. That's the one where there's just, if you look at it now, because the Ukraine, I think I mentioned on the last podcast, the Ukrainians basically neglected it, and there's now just like fields of old T-64s, because instead of putting money into the tanks, they just didn't bother. So that's the main one, and I think there's one in Zhytomyr as well. There might be a few others, but they're the two like big ones I know of.
So when it comes to upgrading any tank coming to Ukraine, be it a Russian T-series or like an Abrams or something like that, or a Challenger, do they have to go there to get the parts, then move those to the front lines? Because that could be a problem.
Yeah, I think Kharkiv's pretty close to the front, isn't it? When you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, it's pretty close to... I think it's probably been hit quite a few times as well by like Iskander and Calibre and stuff, so...
Oh yeah, I would target that immediately.
Yeah, I know Zhytomyr as well was hit. The whole tank factory was hit, and that got like smashed up further in the war. But Zhytomyr is pretty, I'm pretty sure, going off the top of my head, like is sort of central, like west central Ukraine. So I imagine they're doing a lot more work there. But yeah, I mean, when you look at Ukrainian tanks, like the main tank, like the backbone of their tanks is T-64BV. Now, they have got T-64BV model 2017, I think it is. That's got a thermal sight, but I think they've probably only got 200 to 300 of them, maybe. Tank Dyer, you might know more, but yeah, the backbone tanks that they have, which are T-64BV, they've just got IR searchlights, like old infrared sights. So,
your guys' opinion.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, the Challengers and everything going to Ukraine, do you see them going thrown right into Bakhmut? Because if that's true, Bakhmut's already a lost cause. Are they just going to waste all these cool toys that they were given to by the US, the UK, Germany? Or are they just going to have those sit in the rear just in case? Like, what would you do as a tanker in that situation?
Personally, I think when it comes to the Abrams, the Challengers, and this applies to all vehicles, again, all these modern Western vehicles, the CV-90 Bradley, I think they should be made into, say, two brigades, two maneuver brigades. And instead of just slugging out in the trenches, I think they should be used as flanking and attacking. I think they should properly use them the way we use them in Iraq and stuff like that. That's the way they should be used. They should be used for fast, like, shock tactics. They shouldn't be used to sit there and lob rounds over 10K like they're doing with the T-64s now, because you're not getting much out of a tank by doing that. It's just, you just turn it into artillery. If you actually use it and use it for the shock action and use the armor, which is a lot better than what they've got now on their tanks, then I think they will work. But it depends what they do with them, doesn't it? I don't know what they're going to do with them. I don't think anyone does yet. So
I just sort of assumed that they were probably going to do what Effie is saying, sticking them into kind of brigades. But then, I mean, there's all that talk about attacking on Zaporozhye, isn't it? Or however you say it. But like, the other day, it's what, 200 tanks? And they're all going to arrive in drips and drabs from, what, a dozen different countries? It's going to take a long time to materialize. It's like, what, there's three different types, Challengers, Leopards, Abrams. It's not a wonder weapon. And there's all this chat of like, there's all this chat of like, oh well, a T-90M is not going to stand up against an Abrams. That's not what it's about. It's not just the T-90M it's going to have to face. It's like, that might be like fucking 1% of the engagements or something. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just putting that figure out of the air, but they have to stand drone attacks. They have to stand mines. They have to stand artillery. They have to stand HEGMs. They have to stand planes, helicopters, whatever. It's like, we need to move away from this kind of thing. Like, oh, our tanks are better than their tanks, so then therefore, if we send our tanks over, then they're going to beat the Russians, because it doesn't work like that.
But coming on to that as well, obviously, like you said, it is going to be a small engagement with a small percentage of engagement with the tanks, but the Russians are preparing for it. So I don't know if you've seen the post, I don't know, a few weeks ago now, but they've started putting 3BM60 rounds in their tanks, which is the best APF-SDS rounds they've got, and they're the ones that, according to statistics on open source, like, they will kill Western tanks. So they are preparing for it. I mean, tank-on-tank engagements haven't been much during the war yet. Like, you're not seeing that many, really, compared to, I think, what everyone thought it would. But yeah, I mean, the Russians are getting ready for it. So,
yeah, I know. Is it that video you're talking about where that, I don't know if it was like a conscript or a tank crewman, the press asked him, like, you ready to fight the Abrams? He's like, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, you got that one as well, where they've started doing training as well. Someone the other day with like big paper picture of a Challenger 2, and there's like a Russian bloke pointing at it, and it's got like weak spots marked and stuff. I mean, I don't know where they've gotten from.
Probably from that guy who posted the War Thunder forums.
A lot of people are saying War Thunder, yeah. A lot of people are saying they're getting him from War Thunder, which, I mean, when you actually look at War Thunder, and I mean, Gaijin, the company run War Thunder, like, they get in touch with these companies and make these tanks. So, I mean, their stats are generally going to be as close as you're going to get. And I don't know if you two have ever been on it, but if you go on War Thunder, you can use a 3D model and it's like X-rays. It shows you the armor layout, the thickness, where it all is. Like, it's pretty fucking close to life. You know what I mean? So like, people laughing, going, "Oh, you got stats from War Thunder," and it's like, it's not that bad. You know what I mean? It's quite a good representation. Like,
I made a video. I'll probably post it Tuesday on the Patreon for free, because I'm going to be talking about it all the fucking time. But it's like you said, like the tanks versus our tanks isn't a thing, especially when you talk about like studying and fighting and preparing and training for Russian doctrine. And we just did Sino talk as well, and he explained like China's got a whole completely different doctrine than this, and it's that deep battle, and everybody's talking about Bakhmut. And it's like, when you think about like, as we as Westerners and the great Englishmen think about warfare, it's kind of like Blitzkrieg, where we combine arms maneuver warfare through the enemy and we do a thunder run to Baghdad, right? Like, we're just trying to topple the government, get to Kyiv. And that's what Putin tried, but they fucking sucked and they failed miserably, because you know what happened. But this Bakhmut situation is what's going to end up happening to every single brigade, is where they go for the weak points. And that's what happened in February, is you saw this pulse of an attack, right? And it's like all the entire forward line of troops was attacked. They found a weak point in Bakhmut. They exploited it. They surrounded it. And now there's an entire brigade that's going to be surrounded and slaughtered in Bakhmut. Meanwhile, they're actually, if you look at the map, already breaking off and starting to form more encirclements. And so it's like, you're not just fighting tank on tank. These Russians are trying to like sneak around and maneuver and like encircle you and fight you from behind the right and the left and outnumber you. It doesn't matter if the guy to your right has a Mosin and the guy in front of you has a Mosin. You got to shoot two guys who are surrounding you. Same thing with a tank. And like, I'll have him on here, but I know a Cav scout from the 90s who was talking about that. And that's how they used to fight, is he's like, we were prepared in the Fold the Gap in Germany to die in place. He's like, we were prepared to fight T-55s, T-60s, then the T-70s. Like, they were going to throw their shit conscripts at us, and then they were going to throw the better tanks and the better tanks. And by the time, you know, if we could withstand all that, it was going to be, it was going to be, fucking, you know, T-80s. But it's like, even with the Abrams and like the scouts, and they were kind of wargaming it, they're like, you're just gonna have to keep backing up as this shit comes on, because like, yeah, it's a T-62, but it's like, when there's three T-62s to your one Abrams and they're all maneuvering around you, it's like fuck, and you gotta back up. But The Ukrainian high command seems to be like, no, stay put. It's like, what the fuck do you mean, stay put? I'm outnumbered, like 3-1.
It just reminds me of like, I mean, obviously the trenches, it's similar to A1, but it just reminds me of like, you know, when you see sort of like World One films and you've got all the blokes are just like crying and shell-shocked, and like, they're all in fucking rag, like they're all in absolute turmoil.
Yeah.
And you just got one bloke stood behind going, hold the line. That's what it reminds me of. That's what it's like. It's just like, Zelensky's just stood behind him going, hold the line. And it's like, yeah, we're all fucking dying here, mate. And he's like, don't give a fuck, hold the line. It's mental, mate. You know what I mean? But like, going into the Cold War stuff, you mentioned there's a good podcast who I listen to, I don't know if you heard him, called The Unconventional Soldier. And they're from 473 Battery, if you've ever heard of them. Special Observers in the Artillery. And in the Cold War, they had to stay behind observation posts where they just live underground for like weeks and just calling fires. Like that's sort of like you said, with the dying place stuff, it's sort of similar to that, where they just let the Russians go over the top of them and then just start calling in fires on like the C2 elements and stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, the guy, we're gonna have him on, but yeah, he talked about that, because that was like a secondary. If they survive, they're like, all right, this is how you shit in a plastic bag and live off the land. It's like, they can't even find your poo. And it's like, oh, this sucks. Like we were trained even as like NATO to be like completely overwhelmed by the Russian wave. So it's fucking hilarious that they're like, we can hold them. And NATO's like, the fuck you can. We didn't even think we could hold them. Like, so it's weird. It's getting a little silly. And so
this is interesting to look at the that narrative shift from everyone being Slava Ukraine to like a TikTok video of Ukrainian soldiers just enjoying themselves. And they're like, we're spending our tax dollars on this. He was like, aren't you supposed to be fighting a war? And it's all out of Bakhmut, all these videos coming out. So it's either like, because the average American, like the average I've mentioned this before, the average Midwest goober after 9/11 thought being racist was being patriot. And so it's the same thing with Ukraine. They're just going like, we're spending our tax dollars on this. There's potholes in the road. And the amount of like veterans, current serving military, just average passerbys that have kind of like slowly shifted against Ukraine, not because they're pro-Russia. They're just like, I'm so over it. So at what point does it come down to say like, yeah, we're done. Like no more. That's like, I guess for the bigger question, because you know, it's always the elected officials actually coming out and doing the decree, but it's the support's dwindling. And that's a big topic no one wants to talk about. So that's why those old, the meme pages keep referencing that, which, oh, Russians are all conscripts and they're bad. Ahaha, the same narrative from, you know, 13 months ago. But like, what's the line? Because Cody and I know how it is here in the US, but I'm sure it's similar in the UK.
I think it's just a sort of general kind of fatigue. I mean, there's a lot of other shit going on. I'm not going to start making a commentary about the state of Britain and the public too much, but I think there's a lot of other stuff going on. People are struggling to pay for regular stuff. I don't think they really are quite as fussed anymore. Your average person just isn't. I feel like the kind of people who care anymore are kind of autists like us and fucking NAFO people on Twitter. It's...
Not beyond something that, else, man. Those guys.
Actually, not that many people are still following it quite closely.
Yeah, like that guys kind of cracked me up. Because I've been like the pub with my mates. Oh, sorry, man.
Well, I was going to say the NAFO guys kind of they crack Cody and I up because they're the ones going like, "Oh, we're in Ukraine. We're fighting the enemy. Please buy our coins and patches." And you go, "Go to Bakhmut." They're like, "No, I'll die."
I think they're a big reason why a lot of people are coming away from supporting Ukraine as well. Some of them, they're so bitter and like generally just like toxic people, you know what I mean? Like I'm not saying all of them, because I know a few of them are alright, but some of them are genuine like really awful people. But yeah, going back to that, like in the UK, sort of like when I go to the pub with my mates or whatever, and some of them are like, what, Ukraine's like still going on? Like it's not really on the news anymore. Like it's not, the news are bored of it now. They've just moved on to like whatever else is interesting or gaining views. You know what I mean? So like some people genuinely don't even realize it's still happening. Like that's sort of what it's like over here, I'd say, really.
It's
pretty much the same.
It's wild. I'll say that much. Yeah.
From my point of view anyway, I think that kind of NAFO movement kind of gatekeeps it a bit. It's fucking weird because I took a kind of break from this from about August to December. And I came back and like, they're all these like little fucking dogs. I'm like, where do these come from? it kind of gatekeeps it to me, because it's kind of like you have to reach a level of like zealotry or purity that they kind of maintain, and if you don't reach that, well, then you don't really support Ukraine, and they sort of push people away. I think kind of like any sort of thing like that.
I definitely noticed it on mentality, like on our side, where it's, you know, some of the bigger pages on Twitter and Instagram or even Facebook or NGO, well, if you don't support them, they'll try to have like a jihad against you. They're like, he's got to go. Like, jihad. Oh, it's not the narrative. Got to get out of here. Like, oh, you know, a Zelensky quote talking about Bakhmut. Got to get out of here. Like, it's, but yes, the NAFO guys that are just, gatekeeping is a good way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm maybe I'm skewed, because a lot of the really pro-Russian accounts blocked me back like by about May time. Maybe I'm only seeing like one side of it. I don't know.
I think I've started to get, I got blocked by a lot of Russian pages, but I'm starting to get blocked more by NAFO, just because just some of the absolute like bollocks you read on Twitter that's just not true. And like, I don't care what side you're on. Like, the way I've always thought is logic and facts, and like, it doesn't matter what you. I don't care about your feelings. I care about factual information, and I'll correct these like absolute lies I see on Twitter, and they just instantly start like, just start grabbing off, and I get blocked. I'm like, I'm showing you the truth. I'm showing you what's right. I'm giving you factual information. I'm showing you that you're wrong, and they don't like that. Just block you. It's weird.
Well, it's just weird whenever they're like. Their view and what they say completely changes based on if you identify, say, a video as one side or the other. Like, I'm sure you saw around about like April last year, there was a video came out of like a bunch of Ukrainian soldiers standing beside like a BMP. It was like a Russian BMP on the side of a road. It'd been abandoned. It was up near Kiev or whatever. And tanks approaching up the road, and all the guys are sitting there, and they're all like fucking waving at it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then it just opens fire on them, and it's fucking horrific. And the first stuff that came out was a lot of people being like, ha, 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 this is a Ukrainian tank blows up Russian soldiers. And I said from the fucking outset, they were Ukrainian. And I said it was friendly fire incident. It was a Ukrainian tank. And then like more videos came out, more angles and stuff like that. And sure enough, oh, they were Ukrainian troops. And sure enough, the tank was a T-64 BV. And it was near Kiev. And the only Russian troops that were using T-64s were, like, you know, separatist DPR troops. And there was a big fucking blotch on the front of the tank. And everyone said, oh, no, that's a V. I'm like, it's not a V. It's the digital camo on a Ukrainian tank. And I like put up a load of pictures to show it. But as the narrative changed on that thing, when it was a Russian tank, or sorry, when the Ukrainian tank, then everyone thought this is fucking class. When it was a Russian tank, then everyone thought, oh, no, that's bullshit. When people thought it was friendly fire, then they're like, oh, this is really sad again. It just fucking oscillated just based on what they thought the tank was.
Oh, go ahead, Matt. Tell them the story.
So, yeah, about that same time. Yeah, it was. Yeah, that video came up and some kid sent it to me. He was like, oh, would you like to do a joint post to boost each other's pages? You know, it was early days of the war. And I was like, yeah, sure. It's this one. And so I post immediate shadow ban. Like, the page stagnated almost immediately after that. Yeah, it was.
Locked at 24,300. He never, dude. You were shadow banned for 8 months. Like it was. Months, it's still shadow banned. That he posted that video, and I was like, "Wow, that's excessive." And then like 3 months later, I was like, "We had to like sit down, Matt." I was like, "When did this happen? Like when did the because like his followers were going like up 300,
gaining 1,000 followers a week, and losing 1,000 followers a week."
I was messaging him. He was like, "Hey, did you see that post?" I'm like, "What fucking post?" And he's like, "This post." And I'm like, "Dude, I unfollowed you. And why am I following a Korean K-pop guy now?" He's like, "What the fuck?" So like my follower count didn't move, but like Instagram was like redirecting it. And I was like, every like 3 weeks I was texting Matt. I was like, "Yeah, I unfollowed you again." He's like, "What the fuck?" I'm like, "Yeah,
It happened to me on the same video." And I went, so I had like 14,000 followers at the time, and I was putting up posts and I was getting like 10 likes. And like I was on my personal page and I couldn't even search up my page. It was like it just got fucking nuked for it.
It was a rough one. I think because when it came out, and here's something I noticed really early on, and this is more like just like an opinion piece. If you came out and posted a video of a Ukrainian UAV just nuking a column of Russian tanks, money. If you had anything hinting towards like a Russian killed a Ukrainian, gone. the amount of DMs I got early in the war, because there was all like the Russians didn't release shit. It was all Ukrainians just, you know, smoke checking the Russians. And it was pretty cool. You know, it's pretty cool to watch, you know, fuck the Russians. But then I posted one video of a Russian UAV smoke checking a HIMARS. And everyone's like, "How could you post such a hateful thing?" I was like, what? People are dying. Like, yeah.
I've come up with a theory that I call to myself just Schrodinger's Ukrainian or Schrodinger's Russian. Right. And the point being that, say, there's a video put up, right? And it's some soldier and he gets shot. Usual kind of thing said. Or it's a tank and it gets blown up. Whenever people tell themselves, oh, it's Russian, and they're like pro-Ukrainian, they're cheering. Whenever people tell themselves it's Ukrainian and they're pro of the other side, then they're all fucking happy. And there's another thing is like, if they just tell, they can just tell themselves, oh, the guys, they survived. Because, oh no, I think they survived. And it's kind of like they'll go on believing that and they make themselves happy because they think he survived, whilst the other side hates that side, so they now believe that they're dead. And we have no way of knowing because we don't have any more video evidence. So no, I call it Schrodinger's Russian because one side thinks the guy's still alive and to all intents and purposes he is, and the other side, he's dead. It's just
There's one video I saw and I posted it back when I was just being a goober to throw war porn on Instagram. But it was a guy with like an M240 Bravo and he got shot just right in the chest with a GoPro, nicked off the GoPro, killed this guy. And the first time I posted, I was like, hey, this is a Russian video with a, for some whatever reason, likes, you know, everything. As soon as I said that it was Ukraine, it got flagged for hate speech. They're like, yeah, no, you can't say that. And I was like, Jesus.
Banned for racism.
Yeah, banned for racism. I was like, look at his uniform. I was like, it was within 5 minutes. I posted that. I said it was Russian. And I was like, no, actually, it's not even the right uniform. Why would a Russian have an M240 Bravo? I was like, that's obviously Ukrainian. Threw that up. Gone.
Jesus.
that's just like circling back to what FV's saying. It's like, there's people that just don't want to be objective. And I'm talking both sides here. It's like when they believe one thing, they'll just fucking get their teeth into it and stick, even though it's just objectively wrong.
It's a fuck, man. It's, well, Zelensky came out early and said that he didn't want that shit posted. He's like, no, don't post any Ukrainians dying. And
he called it a crime against the state.
Yeah,
if you post war porn
of Ukrainians dying. Yeah. So like, but then again, like Russians don't have phones or GoPros, so we don't get to see that much. But you guys know how I am. I'm firmly in the camp, and it's just me camping alone with my hot dogs and pop up tent. That I want to see the Ukrainian numbers. Like the general staff of CJCS, Millie said it's like 100,000 dead, and then the Ukrainians are like, no, it's only 15,000, and that was back in October. Like nobody knows how many Ukrainians are dead. So I'm in the middle ground on like how this war is going to go until the CIA tells me it's like, it's 195,368.2. Like, where's the point two? Well, he didn't have a leg to begin with. Like what?
Cody, I saw this morning and you're probably going to like this. There was a headline that came out. It was like, oh, Russian KIA in Bakhmut is released by like Ukrainian officer. Ukrainian officer was fired immediately, but it was something like, 2-1 KIA to the Russians. Like the Ukrainians are getting fucking wrecked. They're getting
murdered. Yeah.
Yeah, they're getting murdered. And it was like, and it was coupled with a tweet I saw that said, Ukrainians throwing their finest into Bakhmut. And all the comments were like, why would you do that if there's no strategic value there?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, hey, just a quick question. It's like, I was never in the military. I'm kind of an idiot, but why would you put your best guys in a city with no strategic value? And then for your country's leader to come out and say, oh, if we lose this city, we're fucked. You're like, oh, so you're telling me the Russians have 3-1 odds with numbers, and on top of that, no one gives a fuck about the conflict anymore. It's like whoa, the NEFO boys are quitting.
Do you remember the one I sent you that I sent on Twitter? What was it, 30-1? Was it
Ukraine kills 30 Russians per one Ukrainian, and that's three times as much as we saw in Afghanistan or Iraq.
Yeah, that is absolutely insane. If you're gonna blag it, if you're gonna lie, at least make it believable. 30-1. That's like the best odds. Like that's like the Battle of Rorke's Drift. You know what I mean?
Every Ukrainian soldier wiped out a platoon of Russians.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost as if
one bloke's just killing like whole companies. You know what I mean? Like, what's going on? Who's coming up with these numbers, man?
Rourke's Drift with a bunch of fucking Russians with shovels piling up.
Jesus, man. That's
simply insane, man.
No, because you sent that to me and I about lost my shit because like I was in those targeting meetings in Afghanistan, so I knew the numbers because General Miller, the commander of Afghanistan, was all about numbers. He loved death counts. Like when I was there, Ranger Regiment went through in 3-month rotations and they combined killed 10,000 Taliban fighters over a 9-month period and like target meetings and all this shit. And you're just like, yeah, they've like slaughtered like 50,000 in Bakhmut. I'm like, bro, the amount of work we put in to kill 10,000 dudes in sandals and mud huts was alarming. Like, you're not going to fuck it.
Well, like, have you seen the, you know, like those daily reports that come up from the Ukrainian MOD, and it says like the number of liquidated personnel is the term.
Yeah.
It was sitting at 100,000 Russians on like the 28th of December. And it's now sitting as of today, something like 170,000. So they're saying that basically they're saying that Russia's taken what, over a third of the casualties of the invasion in the past 2 months,
I can't see it. I mean, do prisoners count? Like, I don't.
Well, they say this is the thing. The term is liquidated personnel. That sounds like dead to me. And it's like they add 900 a day. It's just fucking huge. It's like, what, a battalion wiped out every day.
Yeah, I mean, dude, that's catastrophic, like catastrophic numbers. But if you do take that seriously, right? Like, that's what something Matt and I were talking about. We've hit on this on the paid episodes, but it's like people don't understand that Wagner, the reason why they broke through in Bakhmut was because they had access to the prisons. Like, they were just throwing prisoners with like, here's a AK, one mag and a grenade, go to work. And like, they captured prisoners were just like, I got 1 week of training and crawling through the woods and doped up on fentanyl and morphine and all types of shit, and then got told to run through the woods with my AK and my grenade. Like, they were, and people are like, look at all these Wagner mercenaries dying. Like, bro, they're all like the people that Russia doesn't even want. Like, imagine if the American prison system did that. That's we have the highest incarceration. That's like a core of people.
Like, this is like another bit of a myth as well. Is like, I mean, it depends what trade you're going into, I imagine, but the Russians aren't just getting like a week of training and getting sent off. So I got some sort of like inside knowledge, and they're getting, so I've got it up here, so mobilized and conscripts get 6 months of tank training. So that's just for tanks. I don't know what it's like if you go in the engineers or the infantry. I don't know how that works. This is tank specific, but within that you get like a few weeks at the range and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, 6 months of training, that's pretty good. That's all right. You know what I mean? That's like, I don't know if that's 6 months full tank or 6 months including basic training. Yeah. I don't know how it works, but that's not bad. They're not just getting a week like people think and getting shut to shovel and going, yeah, go on, mate. You know what I mean?
They do that for our US Marines. They have like Marine combat training. It doesn't matter if you're a mechanic or intel or comm or anything like that. You get, I think it's 28 days total of combat training. They're like, cool, you can successfully clear rooms, do mount training, and liberate a country if you wanted to based on this training. And if the Ukrainians or the Russians are getting 6 months, that's pretty good, man. Like, that's, even if they're just getting, say, I don't know, 3 months of combat training, like boot camp, essentially marksmanship skills, and then 3 months of tank. Like, that's more than Ukraine's getting.
I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, like I said, I don't know the ins and outs. That's just what I got, but it's basically 6 months. So I don't know, because it depends on crew positions and stuff like that. Like, some crew positions will need more than others, like specifically commanders. Mm-hmm. They'll need a lot more time for the tactics training and stuff. But yeah, I mean, 6 months overall, I don't think that's
too bad. I don't know if you or Tank Diary have seen anything on top of how Russia trains their guys. I've only seen a few videos come out of like a Russian NCO just punching a private who couldn't hit a target. And I was like, yeah, respectable. Yeah, I can see that. But I do remember, I think I sent it to Cody. It was Alcon S2 sent me something like, it was PII on Russian off soldiers.
Oh yeah.
I have a terabyte's worth of Russian TTPs, and it's so funny to open it up. Like, you know, you throw it in to translate and the Russians are going, in ancient Greece, a phalanx is a combat formation used. And I was like, oh, they're doing the same thing we are. Like, they're no different. And so it's, if they're training the same way we are, they probably looked heavily into Marine combat training, you know, basic reconnaissance school, Ranger shit. They're like, yeah, whatever the Americans did in Syria and Iraq again, and Iraq again, and then Afghanistan, Let's just do that.
Well, I mean, they've had 20 years to watch us, haven't they? They've had 20 years to just study the West. I mean, like, if you actually look at what we've had to study, it's not really been that much. Like, Grozny, like, both Chechen wars were internal, so there's not much we could really gain on that, you know what I mean? Georgia, I imagine there was quite a bit looked into there.
Georgia was 8 days. Dude, that was an intense 8 days.
Ukraine.
I think it taught them a lot with how bad they were in Georgia.
Yeah, they had the Russians came out. Russians came out with a forced modernization after Georgia, and so they wanted a completely professional force after that because they're like, "Hey, conscripts don't really do a good job." But I want to say it was like Chatham House or Rand or Institute Study of War came out and said like the Russians couldn't meet quota because no one wanted to join the army. So they had like a mixed composure of half conscript, half professional. But yeah, they used 08 Georgia is like a dry run for Ukraine. And the funniest thing is, I think a lot of people forget that the president of Georgia at the time became the governor of Odessa, Ukraine. And he went back to Ukraine and said, "They're coming." And Ukraine said, "Go fuck yourself." So he was pretty honest.
I remember hearing a story as well about conscription, like just like a funny story about it. So one of my mates is like quite in the know with stuff like this, and like he does it as a job and that. And I was saying like, how does conscription work? Like how did he get you in? Like what if you ignore it? And he said, well, some people just don't answer the door, and they'll just eventually walk off. But he said one thing they do is they send prostitutes and stuff. Like the MOD will hire a prostitute, send them to a bloke's house, knock on the bloke's obviously like, "Oh, sound," answer the door, and then two blokes come around the corner with a paperwork like, "Come on, big lad, let's get you down the office, mate. Let's get your kit issued." So yeah, I mean, not all of them want to do it. I mean, obviously it's conscription and there's a lot of people who try and get out of it, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. Depends on where they are, doesn't it?
Everyone forgets that conscription is never a popular move because in World War One, Canada had the conscription crisis where the soldiers, potential soldiers, the men just wouldn't go. They're like, "I'm not going to France." And they had a problem because they were supposed to field bodies and divisions and they didn't go. And so the government had to have a reform in the late 1920s, I want to say, of how they addressed how conscription worked. But also Americans in Vietnam, like, those guys went to Canada. They're like, "I'm not fighting. I don't want to go die for a pointless cause." And so in Russia, it's really funny to see that, Cody, what was it? Something like a million men fled to Central Asia and like Georgia and all these countries. It was something
crazy. It was a lot.
Crazy.
Yeah, I remember seeing the military borders.
Yep. And they were trying to leave. And it's like, well, the Russians don't want to. But the Ukrainian men tried to. And unless you had money to get out of it, they were like, "Hey, bitch, you're going to Bakhmut."
Yeah. Like, yeah. Dude, it was like we were recently. Oh, hold up.
You're good.
I'm 1 second. Am I good now? Anyway, yeah, we were researching it and we were talking about because the M4s started showing up. And we were like,
"Oh my god, yeah!" What was his name? Stealing Delilah or something like that.
We gotta go down that road. But all I was gonna say was, they showed up with an ACOG on them, and then they were M4s with an ACOG and a Cerakote magazine. And I ain't gonna go down the other route we went, but I was like, that ACOG could be taken off, sold to the Vori, which are Georgian, Russian, Ukrainian, Eastern European mafiosos. You could take the ACOG off of that M4. Sell it to them and two of you could get out of the country. And so like, if you and your fucking mate, fucking like, "Hey bro, you're never gonna believe what I got," and you just like hold up an ACOG like, "We're fucking out of here, we are done, we're going to France, we're gonna party all fucking summer, bang hot chicks and fucking smoke grass on the French shores," like, it's either you know, go die for your country. Like, fuck,
like,
you. I'm taking
I don't know if it was running. I don't know if it was on the last podcast bonus episode or something, but you know, AFE Tank Diary, you might like this. I saw a video of Russian Marines in Bakhmut, like storming a building, but they had like airsoft.
Oh yeah,
optics on their weapons.
Yeah, they were doing.
And so everyone's like, "Oh, Russia is using airsoft optics," and I was thinking like, Amazon cut off shipments to Russia on February 25th. That means their battlefield captures from the Ukrainians. Ukrainians are using airsoft optics. The Russians are taking those. I was like, let's think one layer deeper.
you are so stoked, bro, because you have not seen any Marines, and you're just like, there they are. Oh, first shit, they got Russian optics.
Marines do anything, I get so excited. I'm like, finally.
You just
because all the Ukrainian ones fucking died, so it's like, this is what we got.
There's no Marines left.
We got to get Cossack Gundy on for like, you're the closest thing we have.
That's a huge fan.
Huge fan.
There's something you guys were saying to the chat earlier, which is kind of interesting. Was like the distinction of like air assault marine has just gone out the fucking window.
Doesn't make any sense. Like from a Marine Corps light infantry background, it doesn't make any sense to be air assault and airborne qualified and have like a Bradley to take you into battle. You're like, that doesn't make any sense.
Don't shit on my airsoft team. Don't do that, Matt. That's what's happening.
This is something that I brought up last time, and it's that Soviet hangover of air assault. It doesn't mean air assault how we see it. Like, the way I see air assault and the rest of these will be like, it's paras, you know what I mean? It's blokes with massive Bergens on just walking everywhere. That's what they do. That's what paras do. They might have a few airdrop like Land Rover Wimix or whatever. But Soviet and like, this is right across the Eastern Bloc as well. Like Kazakhstan still have them. All the former Soviet countries still have these air assault brigades, which are full of BMDs and a tank company of like T-80s. I think it's just the name. As far as I can tell, it's just the name, because like Ukraine has got loads of air assault brigades, but they don't have the planes to drop them in.
It's weird.
Who was it? The 18th Airborne Division in World War II? They were used as amphibious landing personnel. 18th
Airborne Corps, yeah. So it's actually funny you mentioned that, because the 101st and the 82nd are actually getting like small tanks. Like, we're going to get like a small tank battalion. And it's like the whole objective of the 101st and the 82nd is to seize an airfield, and then our fucking C-17s come in and the tanks come out, right? Like, we secure the airfield and people fucking pour out of there. And that's the name of the game. And now, like, you're shitting on them, and you're like, yeah, they got fucking tanks. What a bunch of fucking pussies. You're supposed to leg it, like, you know. But now we're bringing tanks into it, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And so it's such a clusterfuck, bro, because, like, even, like as a paratrooper, we take, like, great pride in, like, oh, you're a fucking leg, right? Like, you have to leg it. You have to walk everywhere. But, like, actually, we leg it the most. Like, we fall out of the plane. We fall out of the fucking helicopter. And then, like, we don't have our Humvees. We don't have our fucking MRAPs. And so, like, dudes will come to, like, the 101st and the 82nd, and they'll be like, I have never run so much in my goddamn life. Like, I'm about to quit. I am a fucking staff sergeant. Like, they'll come from, like, mechanized or heavy infantry, and they're like, I'm quitting. Bro, fuck this place. All we do is fucking walk.
It's funny. Like, my brother was with the 82nd for a while, and I used to go over there, and they would bully me because, like, oh, you run 3 miles for a PFT? We run 4. And you're like, isn't the Army standard 2? And you're like, all right, so why are you running more than me? I'm
like, your fucking leg. What do you do after you jump out of the plane? Walk. Fucking walk with a broken leg or a fucked pounds up back.
On your back there, pal.
Yeah, like trying to find all your friends who are scattered in the trees and fucked in the winds. But yeah, no, how long have we been going at this? Like an hour and a half?
An hour and I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Our little Brits are tired.
I mean,
I can see it in their faces. They're so sweepy. Do you want to tuck in?
Yeah, go on, man.
all right, yeah, I guess we're going to wrap this up. If, you know, AFP Recognition and Tank Tower, you want to plug their pages, then we'll like wrap up here.
Please help me get out of
what?
So yeah, I mean, I'm updating the app again. I'll throw that out there. Got a lot of Chinese stuff coming. All the Chinese medium maneuver brigade, wheeled family.
Let me help you out here. Let me help you out here, Afi. Do you like tanks? Do you like painting tanks? Do you like identifying tanks?
Yeah,
can you not get enough fucking tanks in your life? Is your wife tired of hearing about tanks? So go to AFV Recognition. He'll be your friend. It's a friendship simulator. You follow, you pay $7 for his app, and then you and AFV can sit there and compare tank scores, and he's probably going to win because he's been in that fucking shed too long. That's how you plug an app, baby. That's how you sell it.
That's better than what I could do.
Wait till we have sponsors. We're like, brought to you by NordVPN. If you ever wanted to go to Epstein's Island by yourself.
NordVPN. We all watch porn, but there's probably something you don't want the government to know you're researching. Get NordVPN. Hide those disgusting search Wikipedia history.
Questionable outcomes in all of your activities. Set your location to the Kremlin.
Go ahead.
All right. Yeah.
Well, thanks for having us on. It was good.
Yeah. Cheers. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
It's very fun. But all right. Yeah. So I guess we're going to do our plugs here. We do have the Patreon. Go on there. This one's probably going to the Patreon. Almost.
What? This was going to, no. This one's this. This is free. This is a free one. All the guests are free. We don't take money, unlike Jake. unlike AFP, who's gonna take seven fucking bucks off you and then tell you to buy his app. Fuck you. I'm not spending $7. I might spend.
All right. Too easy.
But anyway, yep, so come on over to the Patreon. Yep, all right. So the first 50 people to sign up, it's $4.25. That's $1 a week. If you don't have $1 a week, we probably shouldn't be friends anyway. All right, you need to go watch some Andrew Tate, get your life together, start lifting, go to Planet
Fitness. Watch some Gary V.
Yeah, watch some Gary V. Hustle. Fucking get $1, give it to your boys so we can do things like video game night. I want to do cash prizes. I want to see if anybody can beat AFV recognition and Tank Diary as the British and Americans on War Game. Or War, is it War Game? Red Dragon? Yeah. You guys are gonna. I'm gonna make. Give me money so I can buy a heavyweight intercontinental belt tag team. It's gonna be a cheap plastic some bitch, but I will mail that to you if you can beat these two tank heads. I want to do fun shit like that. The stuff that your wife won't do with you. Go to Patreon. Give us $1. Give us $5 a week. I don't care. Give us fucking money so we can do cool shit together and be friends. You don't have to be alone with autism. You can have autistic friends. Go to Patreon. We have more episodes over there. We have book club as well. We're reading Matterhorn. It's about U.S. Marines in Vietnam. It is amazing. I love that book. I based my entire personality off of one officer in that book, and he dies. So hopefully that's around the corner so I don't have to keep living much longer. Matt,
you're
take
over
it away.
27 there, man. the 27 club. Anyways, so also on top of the Patreon, we have more of our analytical hot takes. If you ever remember the Croatoan days where we would say something like, you know, Ukraine on the brink of collapse or a death by a thousand cuts, we have more long form posts on top of the Patreon. So we're going to tease those on top of the Instagram on Kitbag Conversations. And then if you go over there, you can definitely comment, like, subscribe, and then tell your friends, because we're going to have a lot more fun conversations here soon. But all right. Bye. Talk to you guys later.
Bye. Thank you.